Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Today, we open our show with national news stories from public news service, including President-elect Donald Trump's controversial cabinet nominees and more. Then, hear about action by San Diego County supervisors to help homeowners apply for the Wildfire Prepared Home Program, which can help lower your insurance rates. On Green Scene, learn why Santee Lakes has received two national awards. Then, from California News Service, hear why California nonprofits have formed a coalition to resist actions by the Trump administration. La Mesa police seek public help to locate a missing senior woman with dementia, and the county has approved funds for veterans housing. On Destination East County, hear about fun and festive events coming up across our inland region, including festivities to usher in the holiday season. We'll also have some home safety tips plus advice from Master Gardener Connie Beck on fall trees that you can plant. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Trump was not shy about what he wanted to do, and Matt Gaetz knows exactly what to do with the Attorney General's office. He will turn that into be most powerful Attorney General in American history.
Florida Democratic Representative Jared Moskowitz worked with controversial Attorney General pick Matt Gaetz, who he describes as both fiercely loyal to President-elect Donald Trump and fiercely competent. The House Ethics Committee was preparing to release a report on sexual misconduct, misuse of campaign funds, and illegal gift allegations against Gaetz. He resigned from Congress Wednesday, ending that investigation, and a similar criminal probe closed without charges. But his nomination to be the nation's top legal official is likely to face sharp opposition in a closely divided Senate. Trump has nominated anti-vaccine activist Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to be Secretary of Health and Human Services. That's drawing intense criticism from senior medical officials. CDC Director Mandy Cohen warns against disinformation about vaccines and eroding public trust.
We have a very short memory of what it is like to hold a child who has been paralyzed with polio, or to comfort a mom who's lost their kid from measles. I don't want to have to see us go backwards in order to remind ourselves that vaccines work.
Voters in five states approve minimum wage hikes. That includes Missouri, where it'll go up to $15 per hour and then rise with inflation. Richard Von Glahn of Missourians for Healthy Families says minimum wage increases have been proven to help businesses by reducing turnover.
Having guardrails around the economy makes sense for everybody. It's what allows our community's values to be expressed. Policies like this actually can save them money because it reduces turnover.
The FBI has seized electronic devices from ahead of an election betting website, which faces scrutiny over anonymous cryptocurrency wagers. Polymarket CEO Shane Copeland has not been charged with a crime. He says the raid of his New York apartment was politically motivated after the site predicted Trump's win.
We feel vindication with Polymarket being right, and now in hindsight being actually the most accurate way to follow the election. It's a novel concept and people were skeptical when it came around, but hopefully now people will be a lot more embracing of market-based information.
With the Republican Party now controlling the presidency and Congress, the trifecta gives Trump significant authority to pursue his agenda on the economy, immigration, and other key issues. A state alliance of nonprofits called We Are California says they are mobilizing against possible Trump policies that impact immigrants, LGBTQ+ communities, and civil rights. Angelica Salas is with the Coalition for Humane Immigrant Rights.
Mass deportations, family separation, worksite raids. These are all things that he has done in the past. But what we're expecting is a scale of attack on our community that is unprecedented.
I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. Santee Lakes Recreation Preserve has received two national awards from the outdoor hospitality industry, Large Park of the Year for Parks and Campgrounds and the Planet Green Park of the Year. This marks the fifth year that Santee Lakes has received Park of the Year and the ninth year for the Planet Green Park of the Year awards. Corey Kading, Park and Rec Director at Santee Lakes, says this national recognition highlights our team's commitment to enhancing the lives of our guests through exceptional camping and recreation experiences. Once a gravel mine, Santee Lakes was created to clean Santee's wastewater and send the treated water from a water recycling facility to other parts of Santee for landscape irrigation. Now a series of seven lakes, Santee Lakes provides camping, fishing, boating, special events, picnic venues, and other recreation opportunities. The park welcomes over 650,000 guests every year. The Planet Green Award recognizes campgrounds that practice green initiatives. Some of the projects making Santee Lakes green include recycled water flowing through Santee Lakes to create a recreation area that diverts 2 million gallons of sewage every day from entering the Pacific Ocean, a solar RV storage project generating 50% of the campground's energy, and a recycling program that has also been successful in diverting 10 tons of waste from entering the local landfill annually. By separating green waste, another 50 tons is diverted each year. Plus, the urban forestry program, with over 2,100 trees and 53 varieties, absorbs 97 pounds of carbon every year. You can learn more by visiting santeelakes.com.
This weekend, a new coalition called We Are California is holding meetings up and down the state, preparing to resist anticipated attacks from the incoming Trump administration. Hundreds of nonprofits have joined the coalition, whose mission is to promote inclusion, community, and democratic norms. Angelica Salas is with CHIRLA, the Coalition for Humane Immigrant Rights of Los Angeles.
So what are we bracing for? Exactly what Donald Trump said he was going to do. Mass deportations, family separation, worksite raids. These are all things that he has done in the past. But what we're expecting is a scale of attack on our community that is unprecedented.
The coalition hopes that by banding together, they can fight any erosion of civil rights for LGBTQ plus people, immigrants, and more. The gatherings this weekend will take place online and in person in the Bay Area, Fresno, Los Angeles, Orange County, and San Diego. Find out more at wearecalifornia.org. Salas says California has also put limits on how new immigration detention centers can be built.
We can also model what it means to resist, but what it means to defy. Because I think last time we resisted, this time around, it's really about putting in place everything that interrupts this agenda.
In 2017, lawmakers passed the California Values Act, which says no state or local resources can be used to assist federal immigration enforcement and declares schools, hospitals, and courthouses as safe spaces. The California Trust Act says jails should not hold people with low-level nonviolent offenses past their initial detention period solely to give the feds time to initiate deportation proceedings. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
The La Mesa Police Department is asking for the public's help to find 71-year-old Vivian Crowder, who has been missing since October 29th. She was last seen outside a salon in La Mesa that morning, though there are unconfirmed sightings elsewhere in the county. Mrs. Crowder suffers from dementia and does not have her medication with her. She was last seen wearing a beige head wrap, blue denim jacket, blue and brown floral shirt, black stretch pants with rhinestones, and turquoise shoes. She is African American. Community members are encouraged to call 911 immediately if they believe they see Mrs. Crowder. Avoid contacting her directly and observe her from a distance while awaiting law enforcement response. Given her health conditions, she may be confused and startled if contacted by a stranger, according to police. For any tips or information regarding sightings of Mrs. Crowder or to share investigation with investigators, La Mesa Police Department has set up a tip line at 619-667-7537. They're asking the community's help to bring Mrs. Crowder safely home to her family. La Mesa police have received reports and reviewed video indicating she walked eastbound from the 8200 block of La Mesa Boulevard, then crossed over Spring Street along La Mesa Boulevard the morning of October 29th. She's also seen on camera walking east from La Mesa Boulevard. There was a reported sighting of her at the Sprouts grocery store on Lemon Grove Avenue in Lemon Grove around 1:30 that afternoon, and another reported sighting near the IHOP restaurant on Balboa Avenue in San Diego on November 6th, nearly a week later. But investigators have been unable to locate evidence confirming she was at those locations. Mrs. Crowder is familiar with the MTS trolley system, and she's a longtime resident of San Diego. She has lived at several homes along the Imperial Avenue corridor, including residences in the neighborhoods of Emerald Hills and Mountain View, but she's not familiar with the La Mesa area. Again, that tip line, if you see her or have any information, is 619-667-7537. Reporting for East County Magazine in La Mesa, this is Miriam Raftery. By unanimous vote, county supervisors have authorized the San Diego County Fire Authority to provide a dedicated staffer to help homeowners with applications to the Wildfire Prepared Home Program. The program, provided through the Insurance Institute for Business and Home Safety, offers a discount on insurance premiums to homeowners who apply and meet fire safety requirements. To apply, homeowners must pay an application fee of $125 and pass an inspection. Now, county fire officials can also visit homes to help homeowners assure that they have met the wildfire mitigation requirements. Supervisor Joel Anderson says many constituents have reached out to his office with concerns about fire insurance. As the only supervisor who lives in an unincorporated community, he says, I know firsthand the challenges homeowners face as we have seen our costs and premiums skyrocket. Working with my colleague Supervisor Jim Desmond and County Fire, we have partnered together to help make a positive impact at the county level, he adds. The Wildfire Prepared Home Program is a do-it-yourself model where homeowners must independently complete the necessary mitigation steps at their home. This can be an overwhelming process, which is why supervisors approve having County Fire's team assist homeowners by offering guidance on regulations, helping with applications, and performing inspections to ensure compliance. The program may not be suitable for everybody, but for those who do qualify, it's a step in the right direction. Those who may benefit most from the program include new residential construction permit holders, participants in the California Wildfire Mitigation Program, or Home Hardening Grant, and homes built after the 2008 Building Code update, which incorporated fire-resistant materials. California is currently facing a home insurance crisis. Many insurers have reduced coverage in wildfire-prone areas, exiting the state entirely, or they have significantly increased premiums, leaving homeowners scrambling to find affordable options. Supervisor Anderson concludes, while we do not have control over insurance rates at the county level, we can make a meaningful difference by empowering residents to reduce wildfire risks and protect their homes.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Just in time for Veterans Day, the County of San Diego made $11.5 million available to finance creation of affordable housing to benefit low-income people and unsheltered veterans. The notice of funding availability was created from a combination of funds, including Home Investment Partnerships, the County's Innovative Housing Trust Fund, and the state's Permanent Local Housing Allocation Program. This also includes the opportunity to apply for project-based vouchers through both the Housing Choice Voucher Program as well as the Veterans Affairs Supportive Housing Programs. David Estrella, Director of Health and Human Service Agency's Housing and Community Development Services, says our region is behind in housing development to meet the needs of our community, so we are constantly looking for construction, rehabilitation, and acquisition opportunities that increase affordable housing, supporting families, our veterans, and ultimately build a more resilient future for the county. Proposals from qualified developers must be complete and in compliance with all specified requirements in the solicitation documents. Applications close at 2 p.m. on December 20th. For more information, you can visit the Housing and Community Development Services website or email community.development@sdcounty.ca.gov. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week. This is Miriam Raftery with this week's Destination East County, highlighting events coming up in the last half of November. The San Diego East County Chamber of Commerce will host its annual Valor Awards Luncheon honoring local veterans. The event will be held at the Hamul Casino's rooftop venue on November 14th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. For tickets, you can visit eastcountychamber.org. East County Magazine invites you to our own Roaring Twenties party on November 17th at 6 p.m. at La Mesa Wine Works. Advance registration is required. Don your best flapper, Gatsby, gangster, or cocktail attire to enjoy an evening that harkens back to the era of speakeasies and the jazz age. Savor award-winning wines, a feast from Cupid's Catering, live jazz music by the Joseph Luna Duo, and a raffle with prizes, all to benefit local nonprofit award-winning journalism and our wildfire alerts. For tickets and details, you can visit eastcountymagazine.org. Poway Symphony Orchestra will open its 21st concert season with a trip to Spain with the Romeros, presenting a program of lively Spanish-inspired music and world-renowned Romeros Guitar Quartet. The concert will take place Sunday, November 17th at 4 p.m. at the Poway Center for Performing Arts. The Romeros will be joining the Poway Symphony Orchestra in a performance of Joaquin Rodrigo's Concierto Andaluz for four guitars and orchestra, which was written specifically for the Romeros. For tickets and details, visit powaysymphonyorchestra.org. Sequan Casino offers Sequan Ha Ha, a night of comedy, November 21st at 7:30 p.m. Comedians featured include Mia Jackson, a stand-up comic who opened for Amy Schumer's national tour and has hosted comedy specials on MGM and Comedy Central. Also performing is Brian King, a stand-up comedian from Georgia who regularly performs at venues there and at comedy festivals. Find details at sequan.com. Santee hosts its holiday tree lighting Friday, November 22nd from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. at Santee Trolley Square. This event features sledding, live music, face painting, and photos with Santa, with a tree lighting at 6:15. Find details at cityofsanteeca.gov. The famous North Pole Limited returns to celebrate the holiday seasons Fridays and Saturdays, November 29th through December 21st at the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum's Campo Depot. Trains depart Fridays and Saturdays at 5 and 7 p.m. Arrive at least 30 minutes early to get tickets, explore a holiday gift shop, and soak up the festive atmosphere. Once aboard the North Pole Limited, a Jolly Elf crew will entertain you with holiday sing-alongs, festive stories, and delicious hot chocolate and cookies. As the train winds through the back country, keep your eyes peeled for the North Pole, where the train will pick up Santa and Mrs. Claus. For tickets, visit psrm.org. That's the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum. Julian holds its annual Country Christmas Tree Lighting Celebration November 30th from noon to 8 p.m. at the Julian Town Square. The event features craft booths, vendors, live music all day, a Christmas market, tree lighting, and Santa Claus meet and greet starting at 6. For details, visit the Julian Country Christmas page on Facebook. Kick off the holiday season at El Cajon's Holiday Lights on Main, hosted by the downtown businesses on Saturday, November 30th from 3 p.m. to 9 p.m., featuring festive fun for the whole family with amusement rides, an ice skating rink, cookie decorating station, live music, and photos with Santa in the lobby of the Courtyard Marriott. For details, visit downtownelcajon.com. That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
Next up, we're going to be replaying one of our Best of East County episodes, our interview with Mark Jorgensen, a former superintendent of the Anza-Borrego Desert State Park and author of a book on the region's iconic desert bighorn sheep. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, people-powered radio, recording at our Hideaway studio in East County. Today, my very special guest is Mark Jorgensen. Mark was the longtime supervisor of the Anza-Borrego Desert State Park. He is a biologist, and he is now the author of a book on bighorn sheep called Desert Bighorn, Wilderness Icons. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me today.
So tell us a little bit about your background studying bighorn sheep through the years and how you got interested in this particular topic.
I started actually in my teens and visited Anza-Borrego very often. I grew up in above El Cajon in Fletcher Hills, took every opportunity I could to get out to the desert where I found a lot of freedom. Mm-hmm. And bighorn sheep just really grabbed my mind, and I was totally intrigued by an animal that could survive in such a harsh landscape.
Yeah, they are amazing, the way they can just scramble up a steep, rocky face and survive on so very little water in such a forbidding environment out there. And they're beautiful, beautiful creatures. So how many of these desert bighorn sheep do we have left today, and are they endangered?
In San Diego County now, we're at a very high level, probably higher than we've had in 40 or 50 years, we think.
Really?
Probably over 600 in mm-hmm. San Diego County. And the population that we study is called the Peninsular Bighorn in the Peninsular Mountains from Palm Springs to the Mexican border. And we feel there are probably about 1,000 bighorn in that group now.
Okay. And does that include, there are also some of these in northern Mexico, correct?
Correct. Baja California has quite a few distinct populations. One population now that we think is derived from a core population in Carrizo Gorge has now repopulated the area around Interstate 8 and Mountain Springs Grade, and we've documented through radio telemetry those animals crossing the border into northern Baja.
Very good news. So in the entire world, which basically the southwestern areas here and northern Mexico, how many peninsular bighorn are there on the planet?
Well, desert bighorn, which peninsular are a subspecies of, we estimate now there are about 31,000. Mm-hmm. And we feel that's probably the highest population we've had throughout the Southwest and northern Mexico in probably 75 or 80 years.
That's very good news. Now, how many of those are the peninsular subspecies that we have here in San Diego's East County, out in Borrego and so forth?
About 1,000 within the United States, and then probably another 1,000 of that
so they
particular
really are,
group in Mexico.
Yeah, so there's only 2,000 of them. So even though the population has increased, would you say this is still something that we should be very concerned about, making sure we don't take missteps that could imperil these animals?
Exactly. We have an increasing population in 7 U.S. states and 6 states within Mexico. These animals, desert bighorn, were extinct in the state of Texas. They were extinct in 3 states in northern Mexico. Now, through a lot of very diligent efforts, they've been brought back.
Nice.
They've been transplanted. But we can never be really too cautious. We have to understand what caused them to go extinct in some of those areas in the first place and make sure those things don't happen again.
Right. So what are the biggest threats to the bighorn sheep locally here in San Diego and Imperial counties, as well as northern Mexico?
The biggest threat we have overall in the Southwest has been diseases derived from domestic livestock.
Ah.
We don't have a lot of that in our local desert areas, mm-hmm. although we do still have signs that we have some pneumonia problems that take out young animals especially. And we're seeing certain canyon areas, certain subpopulations that are really having trouble rearing their young through that first summer.
Is there anything that can be done to protect them from that?
We have been trying to work with interagency groups and with ranchers, livestock operators, to make sure that we have no domestic sheep and no domestic goats anywhere within bighorn sheep habitat.
Yeah.
Now, one issue about our animals crossing the border now into northern Baja is the lack of controls in Baja with livestock operators. So these animals that spend much of their time in California could cross the border, mm-hmm. make contact with domestic sheep or goats, and turn around and bring those disease agents back to their herd mates back in California. And really, those things can spread very rapidly.
Right. Now, the border issue is kind of a double-edged sword, though, isn't it? Because on the one hand, they can get exposed to diseases down there. But on the other hand, they have historically crossed the border back and forth seasonally for water sources, maybe food sources. And how is the border wall? We hear a lot of talk these days, Donald Trump and others, about let's just wall off the entire border. A good portion of it already is here in San Diego County. How is that impacting the bighorn sheep here?
So far, we have held off the triple fence and the high walls within bighorn habitat in San Diego and Imperial County. We need to really monitor that situation. When you look at the entire border, Arizona, New Mexico, California, you have to be concerned about many large mammals that have been crossing that border for hundreds of thousands of years. Jaguar, pronghorn, and bighorn.
Can they get through or over the wall that we have out there in East County? It's not real big, or is it just a matter of only after it ends out there somewhere around Hakumba?
Correct. The fence currently ends at Hakumba Airport, just east of the small town of Hakumba. And then there is no fence through the rugged bighorn sheep terrain all the way to the desert floor.
Yeah, very rugged mountain areas, rocky mountains out there.
So we would like to see that status maintained where there is a large gap through the most rugged terrain. There are some human trafficking issues there, but it's not a main thoroughfare. It's not very welcoming to human foot traffic. Certainly vehicles can't make it through there at all.
Yeah.
The idea that some government officials just want a gigantic wall and without any consideration to hundreds of thousands of years of wildlife corridors.
So do very many people really manage to get through that very, very rugged section? I mean, if they were to have their way, these officials, and wall that section off, obviously would have a huge negative impact on the sheep. Is it really doing much good in terms of, you know, keeping undocumented immigrants or whoever they're worried about from coming across the border there? Or is the terrain so rugged that it's pretty well accomplishing that on its own?
In my opinion, it's not worth it. They have double and triple fencing down along the Tijuana border from the ocean inland to Otay, and people still manage to climb that and go through it and under it.
Yeah, tunnels.
And now there's discussion about the Carrizo Railway being reopened.
Mm-hmm.
And so certainly you're going to have a causeway of movement of people and drugs through there.
Yeah. What about the drought that we've had for the last 5 years, which certainly is easing somewhat now, but how much of an impact has that had on the desert bighorn population, Mark?
All forms of wildlife are going to depend on good winter rains and good spring green-up for the forage, whether you're talking about insects or reptiles or small birds. Certainly bighorn depend directly on spring vegetation green-up. And even though people thought this was an El Nino year, 2015 and 16, we still registered a little over half our average in Borrego Springs and in the desert region. So the drought is still in full swing. In order to have young survive, the females are going to have plentiful green up and nutrition in order to produce milk. And we have, you know, a significant number of lambs being born. Probably 80 to 90% of the females do give birth.
That's good.
But then we have very high mortality rates in late spring, early summer.
Is that because of lack of water here or disease or other factors that we'll be getting into in a moment?
Yeah, it's very complex. So it's multiple factors. We can't just pin a very complex problem down to one or two simple solutions, but we do know that it works in combination.
Do predators take very many of the lambs? Mountain lions, eagles, anything else? Coyotes?
Mountain lions are the primary predator of bighorn sheep in our area. In the 1990s and early 2000s, we documented fairly common predation by mountain lions on bighorn sheep.
Mm-hmm. Which are protected now from hunting and shooting. So,
right. And you know, you'll have two sides of that controversy as well. People that think mountain lions are in trouble and cannot be taken, and other people who think that if you took a great number of mountain lions, it would allow bighorn sheep to just spring back magically. Doesn't really work that way. We've seen high predation levels suppressing bighorn sheep, and then when environmental factors reverse and we start getting more rain, more green up, we saw the sheep population rebound and the mountain lion predation backed off quite a bit.
For centuries, the local desert bighorn sheep have had to contend with primarily natural cycles of drought and rainfall and predation and so forth, and then later the introduction of domestic sheep into their territory. But in recent years, we've also seen an influx of development of various types, everything from golf courses to, you know, resorts, and most recently these massive-scale green energy projects, the desert wind projects, industrial-scale wind projects and solar projects. What kind of impact are those projects having on the desert bighorn, and in your opinion, does that threaten their potential for survival over the long term?
It is a great potential threat, and it's a real threat in the big developments that have already been constructed. Many times these things are sited out in the desert, and I think society feels that put them out in the desert, they're out of sight, out of mind. And with government support, unfortunately, they've been put into some very valuable wildlife corridors.
So, yeah, I remember that you told us at one point about a report that the Anza-Borrego Desert Park folks were trying to prepare that would be voicing concerns about the Ocotillo Wind Project when it was proposed, when there were hearings going on that the federal government was holding on that, and that wound up being suppressed. Did that report include concerns about the impact on the bighorn sheep of this wind project, which shared a 5-mile, or does share, it's been built now, a 5-mile border with the Anza-Borrego Desert State Park?
Correct. And, you know, we've had state and federal government support of these mega industrial projects, whether solar panels or wind generation. And we have provided testimony at many of these meetings prior to construction, pleading with these organizations to consider wildlife concerns. And unfortunately, the government in large part has swept our concerns under the carpet. And in the case of the wind generator plant, when asked their opinions, the park folks unfortunately had to say they didn't have opinions. The government, state government, had told them to basically put a muzzle on it, and they didn't want state employees who really knew the situation on the ground countering what Governor Brown had approved.
Yeah, and the federal government, I think, shares some blame here, too. I know that they inexplicably delisted that entire project site and said it was no longer critical bighorn sheep habitat, even though everybody out there said you see bighorn all the time. It took our photographer exactly one day when I asked him to go document bighorn sheep on the project site. He documented, I believe it was 11 of them, 11 or 12, standing there on the site. There was GPS on the photo, ear tags, tracking tags on these animals. Absolutely no question what they were, where they were, when this was taken. And when we sent this to the Secretary of the Interior, Salazar, his response was to order the issuance of take permits, allowing the wind developer to inadvertently kill up to 11 or 12 sheep, however many were actually shown in our photograph, rather than doing anything at all to protect them. And then after the project was approved and built, you know, despite all this evidence, you know, people out there told us they quit seeing the sheep for a long time, and then when they dropped the big blade off and had to shut it down for 3 months, the sheep came back for a while and then left again when the project was powered back up. So it just seems like there's a lot of evidence, if they just open their eyes and look at it, to see that it's impacting, at the very least, the migratory ability of the sheep to move through this area, whether the actual noise or infrasound, you know, may also be impacting them, who knows.
And one of the towers was allowed, as you said, under a take permit to be placed right in a bighorn lambing area where we knew six bighorn females traditionally came to the same spot that they felt was safe.
Wow.
And so there was a take permit provided for six females and six lambs. And this is just not how our society should operate. When we are armed with good scientific information, we should step back a little bit. I mean, they started that project with over 200 wind turbines, and they ended up with 117.
Yeah.
So to go to 115 or 112 or whatever to accommodate bighorn lambing would have been Really no net change for that operation.
Yeah, which is worth noting. It has underproduced ever since it was built. It has yet to ever meet its capacity factor that was promised all 3 years. It's come in substantially.
So what these projects do is you cut off bighorn movement here, you cut it off over there, and what that does is it fragments the bighorn habitat, where in prehistoric times we had free movement of animals from one mountain range across an open valley to another mountain range all the way into Baja. Now we have fragmented this into islands of habitat.
Yeah.
And we have Interstate 8, Interstate 10, wind farms. When these projects are allowed to be built within bighorn habitat, whether it's a border fence or a canal or a wind generator plant, one after another, whether it's a border fence or a highway or a canal or a golf course right up against, you know, into a canyon. These things preclude bighorn free movement, which they've had for hundreds of thousands of years. And it creates islands of habitat. Instead of an open, what we call a metapopulation, where animals can move in response to drought, disease, large-scale fires, they have a lot more resilience in a large swath of habitat.
Yeah, and I would think the islands could also contribute to inbreeding over time. I mean, you need a healthy population that's large enough to keep a healthy gene pool, right?
It could. We have studied that, and we found out that since rams do move long distances, as far as 75 or 100 miles, it doesn't take too many incursions by a ram to do away with that inbreeding concern. But in the long term, you've created these small islands of habitat, and they become much more vulnerable to whatever natural or human-caused catastrophe might beset that habitat.
Now, I've heard some talk about creating special wildlife overpasses on freeways. That's been done in some other countries. Tell us about that and whether that is something that could be helpful to our local bighorn population.
It definitely could, and we've been studying it for about 20 years, and it's about time that we took action on that. Interstate 8 is a prime example. We have animals crossing four lanes of traffic almost daily.
Wow, yeah, I've had readers send us photos of that pretty regularly.
And we've had quite a few animals get killed, and we know that it's happening. We have water, a water source adjacent to the highway, and as this population has expanded, which has been a good thing, the numbers have increased in that southern population from a group of about 30 back in the 70s and 80s, to over 200 now. So that's all a good thing, but that means that you have to provide this historic habitat, you know, in high-quality fashion.
Yeah.
And I-8 was widened in 1963. During construction, there were bighorns seen every day, and for about 30 or 40 years, they were absent from there.
Wow.
Now they're back. They're getting hit by vehicles. There's probably, you know, many tens of thousands of vehicles a day.
So what would it take to get one of these wildlife bridges built?
The state of Arizona built three over on Highway 93 between Kingman, Arizona, and Hoover Dam. They've been extremely successful. In the first 20 months of operation, they documented more than 2,000 crossings by bighorn sheep. So these things are, it's a matter of government action. And so these wildlife overpasses, really, the science is out on them. We don't need to study it anymore. We need to find out where to build them, and we need government funding. We need the initiative. We need some action to allow these bighorn free movement between these islands of habitat without being struck and killed. It'll also benefit public safety because a 220-pound ram coming through your windshield is a threat to human safety. And so in Arizona, they've completely eliminated motor vehicle accidents with bighorn. We've had thousands of sheep crossings documented with cameras. Very successful.
Wonderful program. Well, let's hope they can get that going here. Couple of more questions. What are some of the most interesting facts about bighorn that you would like to share with our listeners that you have learned in the course of your many years of research, as well as your wonderful book about the desert bighorn?
Yeah, we put the book together, Desert Bighorn Sheep Wilderness Icon, Jeff Young being the photographer.
It's beautiful photography, by the way. I highly recommend this book. It's published by Sunbelt Publishing right here in East County, and the photography is just stunning.
We had that difficult challenge of selecting from more than 60,000 photos that Jeff Young had taken, and we put 200 of them in this coffee table book. Our big goal there was to help educate the general public. I think people are fascinated to know that desert bighorn sheep still thrive in San Diego County, mm-hmm. right here where we all live in our backcountry, and they're thriving throughout the Southwest and into Mexico. But our goal was to help people learn more about this valuable wildlife species. And when we hear about potential threats or developments out in the desert, my goal is to develop a higher level of awareness and education among the citizens of San Diego County. So when they hear about a development going in, they can express their concern. And I think once you look at the book and read it, go out and see bighorn, I feel we all have an obligation to sound the alarms when we hear that something threatens this valuable wildlife species.
So what can people do specifically? Are there particular actions that you recommend the public take if they are concerned about preserving our local bighorn sheep?
I think when they hear about projects, whether it's more solar, whether it's Sunrise Power Link expanding, we hear about golf courses around Palm Springs, La Quinta, that are being notified they have to build fences to exclude bighorn. Border fence, anytime you hear that, the re-entry of the Carrizo Railroad into Carrizo Gorge, bighorn will die. There hadn't been a train there in 34 years, and they actually used the tunnels for shade.
Oh, my goodness.
And while the train was operational, I went in and recovered two bighorn that had been hit by the trains. Mm. We know it's going to cause mortalities. So I would just ask the general public to call their legislators, county board of supervisors, and especially if you hear about another large-scale energy project out in the desert, to voice your concerns, come to public meetings, support groups that are doing the right thing, land acquisition, research projects, and we have the Anza Borrego Foundation that supports acquisition of bighorn habitat in
right.
Eastern County.
It's also a good idea, isn't it, to reach out to state and federal representatives, your members of Congress, your members of the state legislature, because so many of those decisions about the desert lands are out of the hands of the local supervisors. The railway, maybe they have a say-so over, but not if it's on, say, Bureau of Land Management land or some of these other places that have been impacted by the big projects.
I saw a piece on the local news TV about the railroad the other day, and I've been following it. I've written stories about it. I've researched it. It is not a moneymaker. It's almost impossible to keep it operational mm-hmm. because of fires, earthquakes, floods, natural disasters, the economy. And all I heard is this is going to be great for international trade between the U.S. and Mexico,
yeah.
and it's going to be a jobs creator. I didn't hear one word about the environment. You know, I'm not going to go out and make a big deal out of it. It's a dedicated railroad, and just let the chips fall where they will. But I predict it won't last 5 years, and it's not a good thing for the desert wilderness or for bighorn sheep. And I think that someone, when they come up with these big ideas, they should consider the environment once in a while.
Yeah, definitely. Just because it sounds green doesn't necessarily mean that it is, with the case of some of these big solar and wind projects and transportation and elsewhere. Now, the public can participate in the annual Desert Bighorn Sheep Count each year. It's in July. It's not for the faint at heart, but tell us about that.
We have been conducting an annual 4th of July Bighorn Sheep Count in Anza Borrego since 1971. And we generally solicit volunteers, mm-hmm. between 60 and 70 of them. And the difficult part for volunteers is they are assigned to a water source that is visited by bighorn sheep, at least we hope is. And they sit there for 3 full days in the shade. a couple hundred yards back from the water.
Yeah, and we might be talking shade when it's 115 degrees out there.
Some days they're lucky and it's only 103 or 105. Other days it's 118. So it is not for the faint of heart. And we have a mandatory orientation program.
Mm-hmm. So people want to get involved despite the hardships. You do get spectacular photos if you're a photographer out there. How do they sign up?
They can get ready for the summer of 2017 by sending their name, address, and their email and phone number out to Anza Borrego Desert State Park in Borrego Springs. Attention, Ranger Steve Beer. And he will put those potential volunteers on a mailing list. And next spring, he will notify them all when the count and the mandatory orientation program would be. They can get involved. We've had people, one individual's been on 44 out of the 45 we've had. Many people have been on 20 or 30 of them in a row.
My goodness. Is there a fascinating fact or two about bighorn sheep you'd like to share with our listeners before we wrap this interview up?
You know, through the use of technology, we have gained a lot of knowledge in the last 20 years. And today we have not only radio telemetry collars, but we've moved on to GPS collars and actually satellite collars that send info directly to a computer. So we've been shocked to see if some of the long-range movements, especially among the rams.
Hmm.
We had one ram that we put a radio collar on down in Carrizo Gorge below the railroad, and he went missing. We searched for him with radio receivers, and we were astounded to find him 75 miles away in the Santa Rosa Mountains.
Wow.
All the way at the north end of the park. He'd gone through about five different mountain ranges, crossed about three or four paved highways.
He really got around.
And during the mating season, they go on these walkabouts in search of females.
Fascinating.
It drove home the idea that we need to keep these mountain ranges connected.
Yeah. What can you tell us about the relationships between our local Native American tribes and the bighorn sheep through the years?
We know through interviews with tribal elders and with a lot of the traditions that are carried on today that the desert bighorn played a very large role in the everyday life of both the Kumeyaay and the Kuya, who were native to San Diego County. We also have found several sites where bighorn were hunted by Native Americans. We find series of rock hunting blinds. So we know they were an important food source. They were also very important, you know, in the spiritual life of Native Americans.
Use the horns and everything.
Yeah. So, you know, and they continue to be valuable to not only the Native American groups, but to people in our society today. We have a lot of folks who gain strength just knowing that wild bighorn are out in the wilderness.
Yeah.
And also folks that want to go out. I just met a guy this morning. Had breakfast with him, and he was going out to photograph bighorn again.
Yeah, they're very inspiring. It's such a thrill to see one in the wild.
So we put the name Wilderness Icon in our book because these things truly are a symbol of wild places. They live in pure wilderness and in wild lands, and we would like to be able to nurture those wild habitats throughout America and Mexico.
Well, Mark, it has been such a pleasure having you here. Listeners, if you just tuned in, we've been speaking with Mark Jorgensen, who is the former supervisor of the Anza Borrego Desert State Park, a biologist, and the author of a wonderful new book called Desert Bighorn Wilderness Icon. You can get that through Sunbelt Publishing right here in East County. Mark, thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you, and thank you for everything you do to preserve our environment here in San Diego County.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
County officials all stepped aside for Howard the Dog to take the first dig during a groundbreaking for the new 23,000 square foot county animal shelter in Santee. When completed in early 2026, it will provide a new standard of care in animal housing for long-term animals as they patiently wait for a new home. The new shelter in East County will also include an on-site small animal hospital, and it will serve as a fire evacuation site for animals during local disasters. 600,000 people live in the unincorporated area, and most of them have animals, Supervisor Joel Anderson said during the groundbreaking ceremony, adding that having a new shelter in Santee helps and enriches our neighborhood. Fawn Maurice from County Animal Services notes that since the county never euthanizes any animal, some pets stay in shelters for over a year. The new facility will provide much-needed space for these animals to live in comfort while awaiting their forever homes. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Crime Beat report. A fourth suspect has been arrested in connection with the death of 39-year-old Gregory Moore, who was fatally shot back on March 18th in 2023 in Lemon Grove. Sheriff's deputies responding to a call reporting the shooting found Moore unconscious in a vehicle at the intersection of Lemon Grove Avenue and San Miguel Avenue. Moore, a San Diego resident, had suffered gunshot wounds to his lower torso and upper leg. Deputies applied a tourniquet to his leg, and paramedics transported him to a hospital where he died of his injuries. Three suspects in the case were previously arrested last year and charged with murder. They are Zaki Miller, Julio Dule, and Ronald Perry. On November 7, 2024, the remaining suspect, Daniel Etheridge, was arrested in St. Paul, Minnesota for theft charges and his arrest warrant for homicide of Moore. Sheriff's detectives are coordinating with the San Diego and St. Paul DA's office to bring Etheridge back to San Diego, says Lieutenant Michael Krug. Two other suspects have also been arrested and charged as accessories in this crime. They are Alondre Dickerson and Tyree Carter. Anybody with information about this crime is asked to call the Sheriff's Homicide Unit at 858-285-6330. You can remain anonymous by calling Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477.
This is Ed Barena for East County Magazine and KNSJ with some important safety tips. On average, 20,000 deaths and 21 million medical visits occur annually, Fire Chief Sam DiGiovanna reminds us. Firefighters and paramedics respond to thousands of accidents every day, he says. Chief DiGiovanna, author of the Chief's Corner column on East County Magazine, offers these tips to help prevent accidents in your home. In the bathroom, cleaners should be locked away, out of the reach of children. Medications, scissors, razor blades, and cleaning supplies should be kept in a locked cabinet or out of the reach of children and pets. Non-skid stickers in the tub and shower can prevent slips and falls. Children should not be left unattended in or around the pool. Pool areas should be fenced in with a gate secured with a child-proof safety lock or latch. Electrical safety. Children can stick objects in open sockets and get hurt. Unused electrical outlets must have safety plugs to prevent accidental electrocution from foreign objects being put in the socket. Every home should have a fire extinguisher. Smoke and carbon monoxide detectors should be on each floor of the home and tested monthly. Batteries should be changed at least every 6 months or as necessary. A working fire extinguisher must be accessible. Keep paper towels, plastic plates, plastic utensils, and anything other than cooking equipment away from the stove. These items can easily start a fire if left too close to the range. Keep pesticides and cleaners away from children. Store chemicals in a locked cabinet or keep on a high shelf that children cannot reach. Do not spray bug spray or pesticides near a child's toys, since toys tend to go into a child's mouth. In addition, never leave household chemicals unattended. Unfortunately, small children may try to open the products and drink the contents.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is Connie Beck with Ready, Set, Grow. I'm going to help you create healthy and beautiful gardens using less money, less hard work, and much more fun. I'd like to talk to you now about why we call fall our planting season in Southern California. Obviously, we don't want to plant in August and September when it is so hot and so miserable. So what would we want to plant now and why?
Well, for now, even though the rains may not have started, and I'm talking about October, November, December, the nights are cooler, the days are cooler, we don't have those August heat waves of 100 degrees, and once the Santa Anas are through, it's a great time to get things in the ground. What's the best thing to plant now? Now is the time to put in your trees, your native plants, your fall flowers that you pick up at the local nursery, and not to plant tropicals. We don't put in any tropicals now. By tropicals, I mean all the plants you think of when you think of Hawaii, everything you think of when you think of house plants that can grow outdoors. These are all tropical plants that are subject to being frosted. They don't like cold winter weather, so don't put them in the ground now. If you are in a very frost-prone area, then what you don't want to do is plant your citrus, your avocados, and anything tender right now. Think about where the plants originated. You don't have to look up every single plant that you want to grow, but if something is called Japanese something or other, that means that it will get by with cold weather, and you don't have to worry about planting it now. If it's something that's called Hawaiian something, I would be very leery of planting it in the fall, because it's probably highly subject to freezes and frosts. Why would you want to plant natives now, and why would you want to put in shrubs and landscape plants now? The plants that you put in now will not show much visible growth during the winter time, but underground, all sorts of exciting things will be happening. The roots will be growing. The plants will be sitting there waiting to get started in the spring when it first gets to be hot weather. They'll take off like gangbusters. Maybe you went to the Water Conservation Garden and you saw the Chinese pistache trees. If you haven't been there to see them, I recommend you go. In the fall, they turn the most glorious color of red and orange. It's hard to describe how beautiful they are. This is also the time of year when you see the liquid ambers showing off, the sweet gum trees. They look great right now. How do you know you're going to buy one that looks wonderful for you? Now's the time. Go to the nursery now and look at the tree colors of the ones that you like and pick ones that change the colors that you like. There will be some variation in your yard because possibly your yard doesn't get as cold or isn't quite as wet or has a different kind of soil than the nursery has, but it's the best way to get the tree that you want for some gorgeous fall foliage. Why am I not telling you to plant your fruit trees now? Because you can save so much money if you wait until January. That's when the nurseries and the big box stores bring in the bare root plants. And when we get closer to that season, we'll have another session on here, and I'll give you all the instructions to have a great start on trees that will cost you $13 if you buy them in December or January, but they'll cost you $35 or $40 if you buy them in May.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Brian Bueco, Royalty Free Music, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.